Good afternoon.
Okay.
Good afternoon.
How are you guys?
We're doing very, very well. You have the entire 515 Hamilton Group, plus Mr. James N. Pritchard,
here,
representing
accounted for.
Business Planning and Partnership at Morgan Stanley.
Wow.
Yes.
Congratulations. You didn't... Coronavirus is not slowing you guys down.
No. Oh, it slowed two of them down a lot.
Who?
You two. You left the country.
Yeah. Anyway, so we are gathered on week 10. We did get the form that Lori was kind enough to forward to us, and I'm certain that we have all watched chapter 10, rather video, and read chapter 10. So, because this one seems to have more format to it, how do you want us to proceed?
Why don't you ask questions? That would be best.
Well, so we're week 10. Where do you, if we were really doing a bang-up job, where would we be?
No, you're doing fine. You're doing great.
That's good to hear.
All right. I think we are. I think we've adopted so many of the strategies that, as we said already a month ago, it's a matter of the scalability and getting it new folders introduced and then the clients pulled together. But I think we've been implementing the call strategy and the contact with clients very, very well, even if the folders aren't necessarily where they need to be. The actual activity has been reflective of the Supernova process. And to Phil's point in particular, he's been doing this unknowingly for probably a decade and a half, so this has always been his mode of operandi. So I think we're tracking pretty well going into the end of Q1. I think my biggest takeaway over the last 2 weeks has been that as a result of kind of how we do our client interactions and how we manage and build our portfolios and how we do our planning, the crisis that has been all over the headlines has not really manifested itself in phone calls to us, which says to me we're doing either a fantastic job or a horrible job, and everybody's going to ACAT out this week, but I think we're doing a fine job in managing communications and in doing what we should be doing for our clients. So as a summary, I think we're really progressing very nicely and maturing well as a team. In another 2.5 weeks, Sean Roth, who's here today, will be a more official member of our team, which is very nice. So he'll be receiving some of the segmented clients that we've been working on for the last 4 or 5 months, and that will be the core of his initial new financial advisory book of business and part of the Supernova process as well. What else do you want to add, Patty?
No, I think that may be why maybe we're running just a little slower than 100% is because we're waiting for Sean to come on board before we dispatch people that might actually have potential for him.
Right.
But I think we've already segmented it. We haven't necessarily done the physical transfer of it because he's not in a position where he can receive it for another couple of weeks. But then we'll get it done through joint production numbers and things like that internally. Phil, any comments from your side?
Well, I think one of the things, and it's not so much necessarily how often we call the clients, it's how we prepare them in those meetings in the first place, is, Mr. Jones, you know there's going to be a bad time. You know there's going to be a time when things are not going to be pleasant. In fact, I use the Don Connolly approach with many clients. I'll say, there's going to come a day when you're going to want to throw a rock through my window. On that day, write the biggest check you ever wrote and tape it to the rock.
Why?
Bill, you remember that story. That's a famous story in our business. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. I've spoken to Don about it a couple of times.
There was a guy, I don't know who he was, but he was pretty well known. And he said he had bricks on his desk. And he'd hand the client the brick, and they'd say, "What's the brick for?" You say, "That's so when you're really mad at me because the market has gone down, you should throw this through my front window, but attach a big check to it."
Yep.
It's a great story.
In our planning, we do different forms of planning for different clients, but when we one of the methods that was used for some years and certainly could be used again is the bucket method of looking at your – it's a matter of how you frame it for the client. A lot of clients don't get asset allocation. They seem to think all we're supposed to do is pick winners, and then they get upset when we don't. But the bucket method is to say, you know, Mr. Jones, if you've got the next 3 to 5 years of living expenses in cash and Social Security, you don't have to worry about what the market does tomorrow. And then if you've got the next 3 to 5 years of income in CDs and bonds that will mature, you don't really have to worry about anything. And then, you know, the stock is the last bucket, and you put that out, and if the market does well, you take it out and fund currently, and if it doesn't do well, you just wait.
I think it's really smart.
Surprisingly, you know, when you actually do that, you end up with about a 70-30 portfolio anyway. So if you haven't done it and you got a 70-30, you just say, let's look at it a different way. And they say, oh, yeah, that's good.
So why don't you tell them about the this month's newsletter, which is part of our focus for this month.
Yeah, well, our focus for this month was taxes. And I've been writing a newsletter for about 30 years now, and I find that the more I write it, the more difficult time I have with compliance because they seem to develop new rules. But this month, our focus is taxes, and next month we'll follow up with that. And so this newsletter, what I did was very simple. I went to the IRS website and cut and pasted 5 or 6 questions from their website onto the newsletter and sent it off to compliance. And they sent back and said, do you want to tell people that you got it from the website? And I said, that's the first sentence. You just didn't read it. And it got approved about a minute later. So that's going out today to our clients. And, you know, you don't have to spend a lot of time on these things. If you think of where you're going. And next month will be a little bit more follow-up on taxes and munis. And, you know, it shouldn't be hard for me to put that together. So now, you know, as we call people, this is the month to talk about taxes. And obviously, we can't just talk about taxes without talking about current market conditions. But, you know, Mr. Jones, I'm looking at your position. I'm concerned about the markets. Yes, it's never comfortable, and you know, we're getting close to a bear market at today's levels. But the fact is that we can still add value to you by looking at your tax situation and do the things we can add value regardless of the market.
Yeah. So kind of in tandem with that and jumping into some marketing things that we're doing, we try to have these regular seminars, and this one that we just got approved is going to be really timely. In fact, I bet we're not going to be able to be in the pretty room because we're going to fill their big room. I think it's Allianz, and they're going to talk about their position on the economy and the market. So I think it's a luncheon, and I think we're going to have a lot of people for St. Patty's Day.
Dave Baconis.
Pardon?
Dave Baconis.
Yep. Yes. So that'll be good.
Pork, beef, and cabbage?
That would be interesting.
That's next Tuesday.
But there's going to be, yeah.
But no beer.
How timely is that? So I bet we're going to get a call. Everybody wants to hear about the market, and they're going to feel the love, because even if they can't come, they're going to know that we're inviting them to come and discuss it with us.
Everybody's getting the invite?
Yeah.
As soon as the invite is
best defense and good offense.
Yeah.
So we're not going to do what...
Yeah.
We're not sending just $1 million clients and then go to 500.
Oh, yeah, no, we're starting.
The invite was approved.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Right?
Oh, man.
that's exciting.
Oh, yeah, believe me.
Yeah.
We had a small problem. They couldn't approve our invites because somebody had forgotten to pre-approve them 18 months ago.
Yeah, well, fortunately, they found their way around it, so that's exciting. And then we have one next month, too, so we try to have them pretty frequently. And at times like this, they're really well-received.
There they are. Now, do they bring a just for clients?
Oh no, we encourage them to bring guests, and that can be a great way. That's one great way to acquire new clients, which I know is one of the subjects of this week's meeting.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, wonderful. So we've kind of gone to planning, implementation. Yes, you're planning your brand management, marketing, and leadership. How's the leadership meetings going for your regularly scheduled meetings? Are you having those?
Yeah, we've always had those. Every Monday we get together and have those meetings. So, you know, they're progressing. That's we've been doing that for a while.
It's amazing how few teams actually do have scheduled meetings.
Yeah, well,
it's shocking.
Well, three FAs have had a regular weekly meeting for years now. We've been also, after we get off the phone with you, meeting and reviewing with everybody else. And it, you know, at some point, now that Sean is joining us, it may make more sense for us to have all six of us at the meeting. And we'll just figure out where that fits in the calendar, whether it's Monday morning or Monday afternoon after this call.
Okay. Let's talk, questions on the marketing ideas. I love what you're doing in your marketing. You have your 24-month calendar for marketing. You've got your 24-month calendar for implementation of the planning process. Questions on the ideas for today. You watch the video. What are you stuck on anything? Do you like something you saw? Do you want information on something you saw?
I think the only thing that jammed me up a little bit was some of the boards and the restrictions that we have to be on boards and how much control we have over our exposure we have to the financial decisions and things like that. This firm has a pretty heavy hand on what you can and cannot do. So it's an excellent idea. And me personally, I've been on a finance committee at my church, which is a 1,000-member, you know, it's a fairly big church, and that puts you in a position of clear leadership, and it transcends to other benefits. But as far as, you know, public boards, they're a little bit more dicey here than...
There's only one person I know in this office who's ever gotten permission to be on a public
charity. I don't mean a board of a public company.
No, I mean a public charity board.
Yeah.
And that's our friend in the corner here who's on the
Trexler Foundation. Yeah.
But that was almost impossible to do if it hadn't been for a predecessor of his who spent months trying to get that approved.
Yeah, but, you know, that segment of the video, you know, it's spot on. You need that type of commitment to do it so that you can rotate into a position of leadership within the board. But I think Patty's experience has been historically, she's been in this business for a while now, that when she sat on boards, those that were run well were a pleasure to be a part of, and those that were run poorly, you couldn't get off them fast enough. And that's, you don't know when you get into it what you're going to receive. Would you agree, Patty?
Right. Yeah. Well, and I think you can't do everything. So I think one of the things that we were trying to do today was if we went around and said, what are the things that are working for each of us, or what do you think, Sean, might be things that you would be interested in doing to build your pipeline? You know, because you can't do everything.
Right.
So like these seminars, for me, have always been a great way to acquire. Acquire new business and retain clients.
Sure.
So that worked out really well.
I'm going to ask you for a little advice, perhaps, or maybe you've seen how other people have been successful with it. But in the last few weeks, we've seen an issue or two with the multi-generational being, for example, losing a very good client who's been a client for 25 years because his son said, hey, I want you to work with my advisor now. And, you know, now it wasn't a top client, but it was a good client and a good friend. But, you know, we need to be figuring out ways to bring those children in rather than losing to them out.
Well, that's why we call it multi-generational planning. They should all be butlers, you know, three ones, all the children, grown children of your best clients, assuming that when you take their assets and divide them by the number of children, they meet your minimum. They should all be clients.
Well, that is part of a problem, though. This client, you know, I could see when it got divided, there'd be nothing.
Well, but if the children are 60 years old,
yeah,
you know,
right.
They're worthwhile because
right.
They have their own assets.
Yeah, and right. I, you know, was out seeing a client and her son the other day, and, you know, keeping him and his siblings as a group will be worthwhile down the road. Although, you know, it's a bit of work, but it's vital work.
Right.
Yeah,
and I don't think we're calling on the children. So I think that's a good idea. We really do need to. I don't know that we've implemented the butler part as well.
No, we haven't.
Yeah. So I think that if we call on the children, and maybe now with Sean coming on board, it kind of is an even additional reason to say, hey, come on in and meet our team member because we have this multi-generational team and, you know,
right.
We're speaking with you and we think that somebody on our team is going to be able to really speak into the life of your children and grandchildren.
Yeah, I mean, this is a team that's got a 40-year spread, right. 40-plus-year spread
right.
from youngest to oldest.
There is something I'd like you to shed some more light on, and that was part of the video about some advisor who doesn't take on a client with a partial allocation, or rather a partial transfer of assets. They want the full transfer. So I've had that in the past, and when I was too aggressive, what I got was absolutely nothing. And I'm dealing with it right now with a client with a fair amount, $4.5 million, but the initial tranche coming over is 6 or 7. But I made it fairly clear from the inception that I couldn't manage the risk of the totality if I was only responsible for a portion of it, but they want to piecemeal it. So what are your thoughts on that?
It's a really good question, and that was Chris Brook. And he was incredibly rigid. And, you know, in one sense, it gave him, his clients felt very exclusive. Because he had a high minimum and he was very demanding. And so they, you know, so his practice was one that was very controlled. You know, your practice can be what you want. You choose at this stage, right? You don't need to be economically, you know, to get by and pay the bills. You don't need a new client. You'd like a new client. So, at this point, you can choose the practice that you want in the future. And if you say, you know, as a fiduciary, as my fiduciary responsibility, I can't manage your risk unless I have all your assets. And therefore, I choose not to do that because of the liability. That's up to you. I mean, that's your choice. It's like setting a minimum, right? In his case, when you remember there are 11 different screens, not just a minimum of, you know, 2 million, it was a minimum of 11 screens, meaning one of his screens was, I need 100% of your asset in order to help you and do the right job for you. So it's kind of a decision that you guys make as to what your minimum is.
Yeah, but, you know, with this, where I'm struggling in this particular case is that they have, let's say, $3.5 million in IRAs. Husband and wife are the beneficiaries to each other. They have two children who are 50-50 beneficiaries. One is a heroin addict, one is not. And if they die tomorrow, the heroin addict gets $2.7 million. And they know it's a massive vulnerability and that she'd probably die within the year. And while I try not to create false sense of urgency and prioritize that side of the risk management, I can't seem to get them to recognize and focus on the big decision, and she wants to move $600,000 from Tia Kraft. While that's lovely, that doesn't really solve the issue that is going to confound their family situation. If dad, who's 77 with a bit of a coronary issue, and mom are traveling together. And so that's a little bit frustrating. And my personality is kind of to demand it all, but that doesn't work very well.
Well, in this case, the $600,000 wouldn't meet your minimum.
No, it wouldn't, but the balance sheet that says I've got 4.9 and an email that says we'd like to ultimately get it to you has me, you know, paying attention.
Well, it doesn't sound like they're listening. I mean, a part of your decision making is to work with people. You know, my minimums were these. I like them, they like me. I listen to them, they listen to me. I trust them and they trust me. And they meet my minimum.
Yeah.
Those in 1972, those were my minimums. If they won't listen to me and I cannot help them make rational decisions, then I really don't want that liability. Now, I'm just telling you me, right? I think you've got to look them in the eye and have a serious talk with them. I mean, if they don't put that money in trust, that's a real mistake on their part. That's not really what they want. They do not want their heroin addict son to get $2.5 million. That's not a good idea. Okay.
They don't. And to your point, the transfer of $600,000 or $700,000 to me doesn't transfer the totality of the responsibility to me.
Well, you're not
right.
Responsible for their legal documents.
No, I understand that, but I see what they're...
Do you think they're going to listen to you ultimately?
Ultimately,
like,
I think they will,
right.
But they're so slow to move.
Right. Well that's who they are. And
to Phil's point, they've got $2.6 million in cash, and they've had it for years. So it's that type of client. They're very, very risk-averse.
Who do they rely on for their decision-making?
The woman who referred her to me, actually, which is kind of ironic.
They what?
The woman, they were referrals from another client of mine, and they seem to take a lot of lead guidance from her, a lot of confidence from her because I have a longer relationship with her.
That's what we get off this call.
So
let's talk about where
I would say, Dwayne, this is you. You're on the, you know, this is a field decision, you know.
Yeah.
You feel like it's going to work. And actually, one of the great things about this program is that those monthly calls or something, if you need to do things sooner, you know, a weekly call or whatever it is, so that we can kind of move forward on this thing. So we're going to talk.
Right.
So your assignment for next week is to make the appointment with the attorney, and your assignment for the next week is to bring me.
Yeah. And what's happened in the interim, her dad had a stroke and they want to move him here locally. And I know everybody locally to help them get positioned within the CCRC network. And I would normally be prepared to do that full on and get it done for them. But I always get ahead of my skis and I give more than I get. And I get frustrated when I don't ultimately get it. I don't know.
Well, you know, it sounds like this is, here's something you might consider. Why don't you consider, I mean, doing, you guys do financial planning, right?
A lot of it, yep.
And I would seriously consider charging them for the financial plan.
And the reason I
suggest that is because they'll take it more seriously. And they'll then have a plan. And you will get paid for helping them for the CCRC. Otherwise, you will not get paid for any of that.
Absolutely, and that's been my motive operandi. I give away all of the talents that I have for free, trying to earn what I should be getting from the inception.
So charge them what you think is a fair fee for all the work that you do, and then and that fee is the cost of the financial plan, and that covers your time. Meanwhile, you get the $600,000, you charge them for that.
What's the mechanism we use?
You pick a fee, you know,
$5,000. I know
it
can be done.
We've charged for LifeView, but if I'm doing CCRC planning, it's not
a
LifeView.
Hold on a minute. It is a LifeView that is the billing mechanism.
That's my question.
Yeah,
the only mechanism we have is that.
That's the only mechanism, but that is the mechanism.
Yeah.
You do it as part of the LifeView.
Right.
You charge them for the LifeView, and then you do the other planning for them. As part of the life view. It's just your addition to the life view.
Right.
Okay. It's on the ground, in the field decision that you make, but also know that you give more than you often get. You're a giver, and therefore you have to be with people that are givers.
Right.
You can get taken by people that are takers. And so what you do is you make a decision to work only with other givers,
right.
People that value you and will pay for you. And if they don't, then they're not givers. They're matchers or they're takers. Read the book, Adam Grant's book, Give and Take. Dwayne, this will be good for you. You'll realize where you've. It was the most wonderful business book I may have ever read because I'm a giver. And I've been a giver my whole life, and I love it, and I still do it, right? I do all kinds of things. It's always been, a wonderful life, no regrets. But I always kind of felt like occasionally people would take advantage of me, and I didn't quite get it. You know, why? Why are they doing this? And
they can.
Because they were takers, masquerading as givers or matchers. And I got sucked in. And now I'm very aware of who people are. And I test them to make sure that I'm doing business with givers. And if I'm not doing business with a giver, it's more important to me than how much they have in assets. Okay?
Yeah.
No, that is my issue. It's been my issue all my life, but I get it.
It's going to be very liberating for you, okay? Because you like me, you can't quite understand those other people because you live in a giver's brain, and they don't.
You know what's going to be one of the things you do? When you tell someone, gee, I'm sorry, but this is not working for us. Thank you very much.
I did. Starting in July of last year, I started to draw boundaries around everybody who was just taking from me.
How liberating was that?
I'm done.
How liberating
was that? And what I found is I picked up 15, 18 hours a week of additional time that I was just giving away for all of their various whatevers.
Yes.
Yeah, it was very toxic people. Yes, sir, you were going to say something.
So, good conversation. What else about, we talked a little about boards. My attitude about boards is the firm, in truth, wants you on boards, okay? They may not say that because you're listening to the compliance officer. But if you talk to James Gorman, you would say, of course I want you on boards, okay?
I never really got in trouble when I was on boards. I was on the Boys and Girls Club board, you got it, really?
Well, and I wasn't on the board.
I mean, I wasn't getting paid
I avoided a board.
Yeah.
Okay, but I was an advisor for an organization, and they said, are you on the board? I said, absolutely not. Wouldn't do it.
Right.
Refused to take it.
Right. But so,
The world is changing, guys. The world is changing, and the firms are changing with it, so don't be discouraged. I was the president of the OPERA as the office manager. In my case, the foundation gave me $25,000, which in those days was a lot of money, because they encouraged me to be on the board. And I always encouraged my guys to be on boards. I wanted them on two boards. and I wanted their spouses on two boards. Think about how many boards you can and what an impact you can make on the community if every person and their spouses were on two boards.
Right.
And became
it.
And became president of the boards. You don't have to be
I
on the finance committee.
Yeah.
You can be on the development committee. And I'm not
sure.
saying this is what your team should do. I'm just saying that this is where the money lives.
Right.
And if you want to be friends with money, one of the ways is to be on boards and do a terrific job. You
right.
can't just be on the board. You need to do a terrific job. You guys are very conscientious human beings, I can tell already. You're not going to be on a board and not do a terrific job. So they're going to respect you, like you, and give you money. Okay?
Right.
So
yep.
it just is, you know, that's where the money lives. Anyway.
Yep.
The last issue, I think, from a social networking, our website is updated right now. We have to do it again, of course, when Sean joins to add
yes.
him. Patty has been working with a parallel Facebook. How do you do that? The Morgan Stanley Facebook that pushes.
Right. It's like the Morgan Stanley social media. And I mean, I'm still figuring it out. But I think what it is you can do the hearsay thing. But then, so I have my it goes through your personal. You set up a business one through your personal. I don't know if you've done that, Sean.
Yeah.
It's a good thing
yeah.
to do. You can probably do that. And then it's not so much, I mean, they do have things you can post on that business one, but nobody's really following you just yet. But I think what it does is now they're connected to your personal one, and we've all been wondering what the firm's doing regarding advertising, and now I think I figured it out. They've got all these social media advertisements that now come to me on Facebook
yep.
that I can share personally. So
yep.
now I'm sharing these really neat, you know, videos, like the five-second
cool.
video or
the Morgan Stanley stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
And on the LinkedIn, it's always been my understanding that you're not supposed to accept an invite on LinkedIn unless you know the person well enough to actually refer them. So I only have 280, but I know all 280. Is this rush to 500 worth not knowing everybody who's made up of that group?
I probably have 5,000 people on LinkedIn. So
you
when I post something... When I create a post, I will get more than, I'll get like 7,000 people read it, okay? So for me, you know, more is better because, but they're all financial services people. So if somebody I don't know wants to link up with me and they're a manager with, you know, Edward Jones or whoever the heck it is, I accept it because I want to have them understand what value I bring to the market. So that's up to you, how you want to restrict that. But you're a public figure, and the more you do, the more you get recognized for it. So... As, you know, people say, well, I don't want to be on there. You know, I don't want that. I want the privacy. I say, well, go, you know, basically, I say fine. But what I'm thinking is go into a different business then. Because this is, you're a business person. If you, theoretically, went independent, what would you do to get known and trusted in the community without the Morgan Stanley brand?
Right.
Well, you'd do everything, right? You'd be lost unless you became very active.
Right.
And that's the way you should think. You should think, we have our own brand. We have our own value. We have to be visible. We want the newspaper to write an article about us because of our charity work. We want to be public figures.
Right.
And so, because that's free. It doesn't cost you $20,000 for an ad,
right?
You know, and then when they Google you, they get the ad about what a wonderful human being you are in the community and all the good work you do, and what a, you know, and Pat, this is particularly important and you have leverage, frankly, because you're a woman, a successful woman in your community, people will write articles about you, and they should. And so that's something that you can work on because it's free.
Right.
Right? So you want to, and that's where you can network your way into newspapers and magazines and the local people who are always looking for interesting stories. So plan on, as part of your planning on your marketing, to build a resume around the community that would be interesting enough to write an article about.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got time. You know, you can do this over the next 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
But your Facebook should reflect your community involvement.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you can change the wallpaper and you can change things behind your pictures.
Right.
That's where you put your community involvement, whether it's, you know, diabetes or heart or eyes or whatever it is that you're involved in, you know, a fun run, a something, put those things in the background so people see that your Facebook effort should be your commitment to the community.
Right.
And that it takes time, but it should be things that you're passionate about.
So for a young person starting out, what would you suggest from the 7 methods of acquisition might be most effective?
Well, the number one is your existing clients. So you're going to hand them existing clients. They build relationships. They learn the 12-4-2. And so, and this applies to everybody here. Your number one source is your existing clients. Your number one plus is centers of influence inside your existing clientele. People that like you already, trust you, and will send you business without you asking. You want to develop those centers of influence, and they become your sales force for you. So theoretically, you could have 4 or 5 clients that are centers of influence that you meet with monthly, and they help you in a myriad of ways to do marketing. The second best way is professional centers of influence. They may be clients, just like I said. They may be centers of influence inside your book. So they would also be professionals, meaning CPAs, attorneys, commercial realtors, residential realtors, business brokers, etc. So that's the second most important. Third would be niches, and then developing centers of influence inside those niches. So those are the 3 biggies. Those are the 3 that are the simplest and the easiest. You use LinkedIn to do research. So somebody is selling a business. You have a client that knows them. You call the client and ask for them for an introduction to this person that's selling the business, simply because you think, you know, we know what to do when you sell a business, and we'd love to help. We'd love to get the opportunity to share what we do for clients like your friend that's selling a business. And you'll get the invitation. You'll get the introduction, and then you make your presentation. So that works very well. And then, you know, Facebook, those are easy. You know, you use LinkedIn, Facebook, but boards and things like that, not yet. Mastermind groups, not yet. For you guys, sure, those are great. But I would concentrate on existing clients, center of influence inside existing client base, particularly professional centers of influence, and then centers of influence inside niches. So, you know, those niches can be your church, but, you know, they could be a business, a corporation. It could be any one of a number of different things. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, let's look through our calendars. Our next call is for when?
Next week.
Is it next week?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're still on a weekly schedule.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, we got 2 more weekly ones, and then we go to monthly.
All right, then we will ring in at 2 o'clock next Monday, the 16th.
Terrific, and thank you for not canceling today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we're here. Thanks very much. Talk to you next week.
All right. Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.